Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Robert Yeager and the Tau Foundation.
Faith here with your welcome toast. People like rice. Rice is great if you're hungry and you want 2,000 of something.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to eat, drink, and be merry with us. This is the season for that. And we have a cookbook coming up that is so unusual. It food is political. It's cultural. It's political. And we see various ways that people jump in and do political things with food. And by that, I mean they pick out a segment of the population that needs help, and they say, I'm going to help that segment of the population. And they go out and they volunteer to get everybody to do it. And then there are people who are downright political. And that's who we're going to talk to, Julia Tertian, who's done a cookbook called Feed the Resistance.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we're going to get to that.
There we go.
So my treasured food buddies, I want to talk also about these kind of low-cal but delicious appetizers, because I'm one of these people who thinks a little planning. If I'm going to have a dessert or something really luscious, or I want to drink more wine, I'm swapping calories. And who wants to get hit over the head with something giant before a big meal? So I've got this idea. We're going to talk about that, too. We've got a wine. My treasured food buddies are here. You know I'm madly in love with these people. Senior contributors Chris Prosperi and wine broker Mark Raymond. Our senior producer is Robin Doyen Aiken. Hey, everybody.
Hi, Faith. Hey, Faith.
So here's appetizers are so much fun to have because...
Oh, yeah.
Well, is it just that you like them, or is it that you need a little something because you're probably going to have a little wine or a cocktail and you need a little food in your stomach? Which is it for you?
I think it's both. I love them, and I love to have a little something to nosh on while, you know, we're getting the party started.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm not a big eater in the beginning, but I do like to have one or two, and I have favorites.
Oh, lay it on
okay.
me.
And it's cheesy. I know it's cheesy, but...
Cheesy, like literally cheesy?
Or? No, it's one of those, and it's pigs in a blanket, and I know people are going to be like,
yeah.
I can't believe he like... I don't like those. I love them. With a little mustard to dip in.
Yeah.
And
have you ever found anyone who doesn't like pigs in a blanket? Hello. I don't know.
Hello.
I don't know.
I think that's how you know it's going to be a fun party.
And they come out?
Yeah.
And once the pigs in a blanket comes out, the party can start.
A thousand years ago when I was married, I had them at my wedding. I mean, that's how much I liked them. I thought they were
talking.
You can't have a wedding without pigs in a blanket.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Okay. Here's the idea for you folks. So I'm someone who swaps calories. And I'm also someone who doesn't believe, this is kind of a Julia Child thing, where she would put out goldfish no matter what the meal was, no matter what the occasion, a bowl of goldfish, the little fish crackers, that's it. That's all she served with drinks. And really, essentially, that's all you need. They're terrific, and there you go. So my thing is, don't fill people up on a lot of crazy, crazy stuff. Unless it's mostly an hors d'oeuvre party, then that's a different story. But this is just me. I'd rather put my, you know, I try and think a little bit. Who doesn't gain weight over the holidays? So I'm trying to think of, well, if I'm going to have dessert or I'm not going to have dessert. So there's this idea of taking little glasses. I don't know if we talked about this before.
I don't think so.
Taking little glasses and putting a dip in the bottom of the glass. And then you put your cut up vegetables, you know, stuck right into the dip, which is like 1 to 2 inches in the bottom of the glass, say 2 inches. And it could be a hummus. It could be a sour cream dip. It could be a yogurt dip, whatever you want, a salsa, whatever you want it to be. And then you stick in either the carrots or the endive, the onion, the pieces of strips of chicken, whatever you want in your cup that these people hold. and they just walk around. So a drink in one hand and this in the other, and then they dip it in. It's not too much food because you're going to have a big meal, presumably.
Yeah.
And also, it means I get to have dessert. That's another advantage.
You just came up with individualized crudité. I love it.
Yes.
You know, those big platters people put out, I just feel so bad for the platters because they look gorgeous and they have all these beautiful vegetables on it. And people like grab a carrot and walk away and you're like, that. And then at the party, everyone's being ushered into the dining room and dinner's being served and you look back and there's nothing taken off the platter except for maybe two carrots. This way you're eating it and you got your own little dip. So now you're not worried about people double dipping. It's absolutely genius.
Yeah, there you go.
Can I just jump in and say, though, I don't want to be given credit for this, you know, falsely. I started reading about this in a variety of, you know how I'm always cruising through all these food publications online, in print. And I started stumbling on some people who were doing this. So this is not an idea that's original to me. I just love the idea that these other bloggers and journalists came up with. So I just want to be fair, fair about the inspiration.
It is. It's a great
really
idea.
Is.
Good idea.
So, I mean, I have put out a platter of bacon. Here's my thing.
No, you haven't.
No.
As an hors d'oeuvre?
Oh, yes.
Just bacon.
Because you know how... Mark,
I love it.
Doesn't champagne or sparkling wine love fat and
salt?
Oh,
absolutely.
So what is the best fat and salt? Strips of bacon.
Yeah.
So I made up a whole pound of bacon, extra crispy, put it on a platter, put it on the counter, and started pouring the sparkling wine for people. And there you just helped yourself to
it.
So I did it. And they, you know, they were the guests that night. They were just... two extra guests, so there were four of us, and they were a little sparing in their eating of the bacon, and I thought, is this a failure? And then somehow during the dinner, it came out that they had this, they were on statins, they had this super high cholesterol, and I thought, this is not the thing to do.
No, not turkey bacon.
So it wasn't necessarily a fail, but...
I don't know what to call it. This is the new form that has to go out before dinner.
Yes.
No, can you give us your health issues?
Food allergies.
Yeah, cholesterol intake.
Cholesterol. Yeah. How much do you weigh? So, around the holidays, what's your vibe? Are you so crazy busy that everything gets done at the last minute? Are you planning people? What is happening?
Oh, I'm last minute. I am so last minute. I'm the reason the stores are open Christmas Eve to like 2 in the morning or whatever. I am that guy.
Are you? I'm with you.
You are too?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
In terms of food also?
Everything.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, wine's, for me, I'm lucky, wine's there already. So it's not...
Because of what you do.
Yeah.
So you're not planning it.
I'm not planning it.
You have a bunch
have
to
it.
Choose
yeah,
from.
So... Okay. But if I want something special and I don't necessarily have it, then yeah, it takes a little planning.
Can I ask you what you start with? Do you start with the wine? My dear friend Bob Finn at Mount Carmel Wines, he starts with the wine and builds the meal around the special wine. What do you do? Do you do the reverse?
I do the reverse because we have traditional foods that we serve. So I'm always trying to think of different wines to pair. So my mother-in-law, she makes these cannellonis. It's a crepe that's stuffed with ham and ricotta and chicken, and then there's a red and white sauce that's served over the top of it.
If you ever do a seafood one?
Well, on Christmas Eve, my mother does a seafood.
Seven fishes?
She does a seafood casserole that is just,
what's good about that?
Oh, everything. I mean, it's got shrimp, it's got lobster, it's got scallops. And just loads of butter.
Is it a cream sauce in there?
No, it's just broiled with butter and
so
lemon.
So like baked, and it, breadcrumbs almost, on the top? So it's like baked stuffed shrimp.
It's like a
words.
Baked stuffed shrimp, yeah.
But a casserole.
But in a casserole.
Wow, that's even better than
Robin,
it's so rich and so delicious.
Robin, what about you? Are you a good planner for the holidays?
Yeah, sure. At least like a week or two ahead, I know exactly what's going on. And we have little kids, so we tend to be informal. One year we even did it was a mild winter, so we smoked a pork shoulder outside and had pulled pork for Christmas dinner.
And that had you planned that ahead of time, or was this kind of a last-minute decision?
Well, we had to plan ahead of time because we had to make sure that the weather outside was going to be mild enough that our pork would cook in a good amount of time, you know, 12 hours or however long. We had an alternative plan, and that was to do the pork shoulder in the crock pot. So even if it, you know, if there was some crazy weather and we had to abandon the idea of smoking outside, we had the crock pot.
So this gets to this topic of what feels festive for the holidays to people. Do you feel that you can do something that you would ordinarily do on a weekend, or does it have to be something special? Because it's the quote-unquote holiday, whatever your holiday might be. It might be Hanukkah, it might be Kwanzaa, it might be Three Kings, Christmas. Whatever it is, your holiday, you know, a lot of times we get led to traditional foods of that holiday. But if it's not that, what is the thing that guides you? Does it have to be special? I do tend to think I have to do something special.
I do too.
I think I fall a little on both. I'm just so used to traditional. My mom's Austrian, so we had this. I think we've had the same thing forever for Christmas. We have Christmas goose, braised red cabbage. I mean, these are just, again, maybe not traditional American, but it's tradition for my family because that's all we've ever had.
Yeah.
And I think that makes it special. So I guess what I'm traditional. I guess what I'm saying is traditional can be special, right? If you don't do it every day, right? And that's our traditional Christmas. And I don't know. I think I'd feel weird if she broke out a cookbook and made something new. Do you know what I mean? We're having on Christmas dinner because that's what we have on Christmas dinner.
Now, I happen to, you know, I would like to drive over to Chris's house and have that goose because I'm a goose nut. I think it is so delicious. It's not the easiest thing to cook, it turns out. But Chris, and there's not a tremendous amount of meat on goose. Yeah. So does your mother cook a couple of them to feed everybody, or does the one goose go around?
The one goose goes around, and we have other things, and that's the thing. You have a lot of sides, and
The reverse of how we do it. We do it with it. The protein is the primary thing, the meat, and then the sides are secondary. And you're saying at your event, there's not so much goose, so that's maybe secondary and the sides
are
primary,
and then the goose is special because you have a couple little slices, and it is really filling, right? Goose is it's high in fat, and it's so yummy.
Rich.
It's rich food, so you don't need a lot, but I don't know, all the sides just kind of make it, and it's all, like I said, it's all the traditional Austrian sides.
I can't get my kids to eat goose, so I don't even try that.
You don't even tell them.
But you know, I'm not for fooling kids, but my friend got her kids just decided out of the blue that they didn't eat fish, and so she would make them fish and say it was chicken of the sea, and they ate it happily. So I mean, I really respect kids' taste buds because they're weird when you're little. They're not kidding. They don't like things, and they're not faking it. So I don't mean to trick them, but sometimes there's a psychological thing.
It's a funny looking
going on.
Chicken.
It's Christmas chicken.
It's Christmas chicken. This is the Christmas chicken. Yes.
Okay. Oh, we have lots more holiday stuff coming your way. And don't forget, in our third segment, Julia Tertian is joining us. She has done the most unusual political cookbook. It's called Feed the Resistance. So you're going to hear some great recipes for small groups or large groups of protesters, including yourself. Okay, we're going to get to that. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. We're online now at foodschmooze.org, and we'll be right back.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked Cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'm Faith Middleton, and we love the local. Please support your local food growers and food makers. And you know about the podcast. Just sign up for it once at foodschmooze.org. While you're there signing up, you will also see our curated food, wine, and cocktail recommendations. So have a look at that. We've got a wine tasting ahead for you. And once again, it's a vineyard in Chile. And we can find some not only affordable wines, but wines that are made in the old-fashioned way, in a kind of handmade way, where the grapes are hand-picked and they're not doing crazy things or putting in crazy additives, and that's what this wine is. So it's a Santa Carolina Cabernet Sauvignon. Goes with so many kinds of things. This one is a Reserve Familia, they call it. Mark Raymond discovered this for us. Mark, tell us about it.
So this is a wine that comes from very specific vineyards in Chile, some of their older vines, and spends a little bit more time in oak than their classic Reserva level. So this is Reserve de Familia Cabernet Sauvignon. This recipe spends about 15 months in new French oak, and it's just a really luscious, delicious sort of blackberry and boysenberry, and then with a little bit of chocolate, like dark chocolate notes to it. Mm. I love the little subtle spice, and then the oak is just so well
so
blended in.
This is around, would you say, around $20?
Under $20.
Okay. So
no more than $20.
No more than 20. So probably 18 to 20, depending on where you get it.
Exactly.
And this is on our website. We've got a picture of the label. We tell you what to say to your wine store. Call ahead. Wine stores can't stock everything, but they should have it for you within 24 hours. They just call the distributor. We'll tell you what to say so they can easily look it up in the book and tell you if they've got it. That's all at foodschmooze.org. Chris, we like this.
I love this, but I have a question because now we're going a little higher in price.
Right.
And I have friends that are a little intimidated when they go that high, so they always buy the same thing. So in other words, if they're going to spend $20+ on a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon, they're going to go to California. So I guess I want to be able to tell, what is the, is there a major difference between the flavors in a Cabernet Sauvignon grown in Chile or one grown in California? Is it similar? Is one better than the other? Are they cousins, kind of, or?
They're going to be stylistically different, but okay, there are going to be some similarities as well. So you're going to have that deep dark berry and plum fruit that you get, but your Napa Valley and Sonoma and Washington State have their distinct flavor characteristics. Mm-hmm. And then when you get down to South America, especially Chile, the pepper notes seem to pop a little bit more.
Okay. That's not bad.
But I mean, the fruit is still there. It's very vibrant. It's very lush and so welcoming. I love this wine. Just to stick my nose in there, you get a beautiful bouquet.
So here's what I notice about these pepper notes that Mark is talking about. This is a quality that can make it very food friendly,
mm-hmm,
whereas okay, a kind of super fruit forward wine that you might get from California and some other places, not quite
as
food friendly. Mm. You know, it is almost the way that Italian and French wines are more food friendly. This Chilean wine is that way too. Don't you think?
Yes,
food's better because of the wine. The wine's better because of the food.
Because of the food, they complement each other very well, and I just love the balance. So you think of when you taste a wine, and it hits the palate, and you think, okay, does the fruit characteristic jump out too much, or does the tannin characteristic mm-hmm. jump out too much? This just kind of, it's seamless from front to back.
No, that's and a great description.
Yeah. And then you have that echo that you always speak of, and that just kind of, it echoes on your palate for a while,
yes,
and you say, oh, this is still with me. I kind of like this. Yeah.
It's very good for the money. And with the holidays coming up, we chose one that was, you'll see on our website, we have lots of $10 wines on there. So if you're having a crowd, feel free. Yeah. This is a little bit up. So it's, you know, $18, $19, or $20 a bottle, depending on your store. And it is, it's nice for the holidays, I think, if you're having just a few people over or just the two of you, whatever you want. I think that's a good price point and it's good quality. So Santa Carolina, go to foodschmooze.org. I want to talk with the three of you about this story that was not so long ago in the New York Times. And it is the earliest record of wine being made that they have found so far. And here's what happened in Georgia, in the Russian region, Georgia. This is in the South Caucasus Mountains between Europe and the Middle East. This is now apparently the first evidence of the first humans to conquer the common grape. And they just learned that dating back to 6,000 BC, they found some pottery stuff.
Yeah.
And suddenly they took it to the University of Pennsylvania and they analyzed it with this, you know, kind of Star Trek spectrometer thing. And I'll be darned, it dated to, before that it was 7,000 BC. This is the first time 6,000 BC traces of it on the pottery.
Yeah, people were enjoying wine for like 1,000 more years than
we thought.
I mean, it's
that
really
just... That
makes
me happy knowing that.
Yeah, they celebrated.
That makes me happy.
Makes me feel good about drinking.
Yeah.
I mean, what you do, wine. Representing wine.
Yeah.
Somebody said, you know, when they were doing this, there's always a no person, and they said, you know, they could have been just having grape juice, but I think no.
No.
No, they're not. They were making wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear, and it was on many traces of the pottery. So they think there were these vessels that they kept this wine in. Isn't that amazing?
That
date
of
1,000 years earlier than we thought, 5,000 BC. Just extraordinary.
Yeah, that's evolution at its best.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Totally.
Well, don't we go through life, I know I do, thinking, who ate the first lobster? Who discovered that you could eat an oyster?
Yeah.
You know, what?
Who put chocolate and peanut butter together?
Yeah, exactly.
What genius.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just a shame that there's no record of the people who did this.
Who decided to turn peanut into butter?
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It was because probably it an accident.
Good, yeah, it wasn't good enough just to eat the peanuts. Now we got to make it into a butter.
When that so story gets told bread. About the first hamburger, it always comes with the story. You know, there's a debate. They say it's Louis Lunch in New Haven, Connecticut. There's a debate, and they say it happened because this man was catching a train, and he went in and said, can you do something with this chopped meat so I can take it with me on the train? I've got to go. And they put it on bread, and the hamburger was born. That's the story
that gets told. Yeah. Yeah.
So you can see that the motivation was carry away. How can we help you carry this away? Mm. How did everything else get discovered?
I think wine must have been the how do we get this to last longer, right? How do we get it to not?
Yeah.
Fermentation.
Yeah. Fermentation.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Storing it in the amphora in a cool, dark place.
Yeah.
And did people before that, I mean, to what extent did people want to enter another realm, as in get high, but get high for religious
alcohol,
purposes?
Sure.
So they were probably using various, you know, mushrooms and whatnot to fuel these religious ceremonies. That was usually the case.
Or for medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know?
And then they discover what alcohol can do.
Mm-hmm.
So you just wonder. Yeah. But I'm constantly trying to figure out who was the first person to discover this weird, weird thing.
Yeah, we just want to know who to thank.
Yeah. there was somebody.
Hey, can I do, we're running out of time for the holidays. Can I do a quick gift?
Ooh,
yeah.
Gift ideas.
Because this is preserved lemons take weeks to, you know, get good in the jar.
Yep.
This is 24-hour preserved lemons.
That you can make yourself?
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
Shortcut.
Yeah.
I saw this
years ago in Cook's Illustrated. And I cut it out, and I was going through files the other day, and it came out, and I thought, I'm going to make this for people for the holidays. So you just slice up. We have this at foodschmooze.org right now. You slice up some lemons, very thin, and in a bowl, you toss them with a few tablespoons of sugar and salt, and then you just stir in a certain amount of extra virgin olive oil. We give you the recipe. You stir it up. And then pack it into either a bowl or a jar, cover, and refrigerate it for 24 hours. You can then put a label on that and give it to people, and they can chop it up, put in with their fish, their rice, their chicken.
I always see recipes for it, and I never have them on hand, and I'm like, oh, that takes weeks to make.
And also so expensive to buy. Yeah. I buy them, and it kills me every time, but they're so good. Are they as good as the long preserved? No.
Who cares
but
at this point?
But they're very good. They're very, very good. So 24-hour preserved lemons as the ideal gift at foodschmooze.org.
Like yeah, me too.
Love it. Going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Food's always been my gift. I just made sauerkraut.
Oh,
so now
I was going to say that,
I made
Chris.
Sauerkraut,
you usually
a big batch,
get sauerkraut.
And then I already bought my jars. My chef made hot sauce. He pickles. This year, I think he did about 9 gallons of peppers that he pickled, and he's going to start pureeing them any day now and start bottling it, and we give that as gifts. So, yeah, I just think it's a more personalized gift. It doesn't cost you as much. And I think people, every time they open that jar of hot sauce or get some sauerkraut or whatever it is, they think of you.
And these are things you can do quickly, Mark.
You know what I do is a chimichurri. Everybody loves
and no one knows
our chimichurri.
What it is. Put it in a little jar?
Yeah, put it in little jars.
Yeah, and keep it in the fridge.
It is just fantastic to open that up during the winter.
And what do you serve it with?
Oh, you put it on pork. You put it on chicken.
What's in it?
Oh, it's got parsley. It's got garlic. It's got smoked paprika. It's got lemon zest, red wine. Well, sometimes I use balsamic vinegar, but some sort of vinegar.
Anchovies, no, not in that Okay.
No.
You know what's great about that is that if you leave the house before work and you forgot to, you know, marinate the chicken or whatever it is before you left for work, you come back and you only have that bland thing to look forward to. You have some ready-made chimichurri. Who cares that you forgot to marinate the meat?
You're putting that right over the top after it comes out of the oven off the grill. And it doesn't matter what. It's good with it's good on vegetables.
So quick. I love that.
So easy.
The author of How Food is Political. She's done a cookbook. I don't think anybody's done this before. It's called Feed the Resistance. Recipes, hers and other contributors, and some of them are so good, whether you're doing it for a few people or a whole bunch of people who are resisting something politically. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Like those Christmas cookies, sugar. I should do like those Christmas cookies, babe. Ones that look like Santa Claus, Christmas trees and trails, y'all. Should do like those Christmas cookies, babe. I should do like those Christmas cookies, babe.
Faith Middleton, you can sign up for our free podcast, which means a copy of the show and it will arrive. You sign up for it once, it arrives in your inbox. You know, if you know this already, forgive me. There are people who don't know how this works. So you just go to fuchmoos.org, S-C-H like school, M-O-O like the cow, Z, fuchmoos.org, and sign up for it just once, and then we don't bother you at all. We just want you to be able to listen on your time. This is why more and more people are signing up for podcasts. I'm with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, wine broker Alex Province, Mark Raymond, our senior contributor, also a wine broker. I shouldn't say I'm with Alex Province because he's on his way to Spain as we speak.
And we're
and
happy
I don't know why.
Him.
I'm just so used happy to him being here, and we miss him. Okay, here's the thing I want to say to you because I'm excited about this guest. Food is, this is no surprise to you, food is cultural, it can be political, and if you think about it, we're talking about Meals on Wheels. They feed the elderly. God's Love We Deliver. They feed those at home who are sick, especially with AIDS. The celebrated chef Jose Andres flew into storm-ravaged Puerto Rico to help feed hungry people there because they had nothing. And he ended up staying there to cook and feed and set up networks, serving millions of meals to Puerto Ricans. So when disaster strikes, some among us want to give with food or inspire with food. Remember Chef Michael LaMonaco? He worked feeding people all through 9/11 in New York. And Connecticut chef Michelle Nichon, his work here to get double food stamps for people at farmers markets who couldn't afford the high price of fresh food and would sometimes stand at either in the supermarket or at these food markets and cry because their food stamps, the SNAP stamps, they didn't have enough to afford sweet potatoes or fresh vegetables. And so he said, we're not only going to make that happen, we're going to double the value of your stamps. So you see how food tends to be, at least in this respect, political. So all to say, we have a new and thoroughly enjoyable entry into the food politics scene. That would be Julia Tertian and her new cookbook called Feed the Resistance, recipes for feeding both small and large groups of political activists, whether they are gathering to work on getting out the vote, to, say, save Obamacare, to protest for or against the current administration's policies, usually against the current administration's policies. I'm not sure. We were talking about this before the show. I'm not sure anybody's ever done a book like this before. And so I just think it's so original. Julia Tertian, author of Feed the Resistance, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Faith. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Okay. So the obvious first question, because we can't get by this before we get to great things to eat, is what was happening in your life where the moment arrives and you say, I know what I should do?
Yeah, it was last February. You know, I felt all sorts of things after the election, scared, angry, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I thought, what can I contribute that would be productive and that could be positive? I wrote my editor. I was working on another cookbook. I was on deadline for it. And I wrote her and I said, let's do a different book right now. And I want to bring in all these contributors. Also, let's give all the money to the ACLU. So, you know, I asked her.
Did she? Well, if you know publishing that, people will be shouting with laughter.
Exactly.
So did she, you know,
she said
first?
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It was a great moment. And, you know, I felt a real sense of urgency about the book. You know, I felt like it was really born from the momentum, you know, after the Women's March across the world and, you know, all of this energy being directed towards the resistance.
Well, who's the book aimed at, these recipes?
Sure.
Who are you talking to?
Honestly, it's for everyone. It does not matter at all who you voted for, what your actual politics are, because at the end of the day, the book is about food and it's about community. It's about nurturing community and feeding the people around you. And that could be your family. Mm-hmm. It's really anyone. And all the food in the book is affordable. It's easy to make. It's really easy to share. This is food you can really serve people, you know, and to bring people around a table.
It has that kind of design. It almost looks like, you know, sort of a brown paper bag on the outside. Mm-hmm. It's just a great, great design. So, Chris Prosperi.
It's genius. I have a friend who's right after the election started a social justice group. And she had trouble bringing people around, and then she decided that she would do it around a dinner table, and now it's really popular.
So let me try Absolutely. This. How many people here, I happen to be a quinoa lover. You know, it's a trendy thing, but I just like it.
Yeah.
So good. Robin, your kids, do they eat quinoa? Do they understand?
They don't even know what quinoa is.
But if you serve it to them.
They eat it, but they don't
know
what it is.
Because I figure when they reject certain foods because it's a green or a grain, it's just more for me. It's fine.
Well, but have they, if you say anything to them, will they eat quinoa? If you say anything.
They'll try a bite of anything. They really will. They're adventurous to that extent, but then they pretty much reject things that are green or grains.
Okay. So they're thrown out of the movement.
Yeah. Yep. They're going to have to protest in other ways.
Yeah. All right. So here's the reason I say this is that one of the recipes is roasted broccoli and quinoa with curry cashew dressing. I love this recipe. So tell us how this works, Julia.
The idea with that recipe is it's sort of building blocks. It's a pot of cooked quinoa, but that could be any, it could be brown rice, it could be white rice, any grain, and then some roasted broccoli because roasting it just makes it sweeter and crispy and delicious. And then this incredibly easy curried cashew dressing, which is just cashews and some curry powder, a little lemon juice and water in the blender.
Yeah.
It's so rich and delicious.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Because I thought, how complicated is that? We're talking here, Julia's got this set up as broccoli in a bowl. You just drizzle on the olive oil with a little salt. Then you put that broccoli on a hot sheet pan. And then meanwhile, while that's roasting, here comes that cashew dressing, which is in a blender, along with a touch of curry powder, as Julia says, lemon juice, and some water. You just blend it up, and then the quinoa gets cooked. You can, if you want, you can cook it in chicken stock or shrimp stock. Fluff it, and on goes the broccoli and the cashew dressing. And that's just nice, and you can do it for a small amount of people, or you can do it for a big crowd, because these recipes scale up, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's really easy to make big batches if you have a big group of people. Or you can make big batches and keep that stuff in your fridge, the quinoa, the broccoli, the dressing, and then just sort of mix and match throughout the week.
This is Julia Tertian, and she is author of this small, wonderful little hardback book, which is called Feed the Resistance. Of course, Julia is engaged in a kind of political resistance, thought food would be a good way to feed people who are doing their political work. And hers happens to be about resisting certain policies within the current administration. Yours could be something else. So on the website, foodschmooze.org, cauliflower is one of the new kales. So we have spicy tandoori cauliflower with minted yogurt. Before we go to it, Julia, have you served any of this food to any political gatherings?
I have. I'm pretty involved with a local grassroots organization in my community called Citizen Action, and I regularly bring food to their meetings. And I have a whole network of home cooks in my area. We make sure all these meetings are supplied with food. And you mentioned earlier, you know, about the friend who has a social justice group, and the minute that turned into a meal, you know, how much it's changed. You know, I often think about if you have a bunch of people around a table just talking, you know, it's a meeting. But if you put food on the table, it becomes a meal. And everything changes, you know, the body language changes, the interactions change. And so, bringing food to political meetings is, it's really helpful. And it just really is it's a very tangible way to support the important work that's happening, that's about supporting communities and about civil rights. And
Chris Raspberry.
I like the recipes have a soothing kind of quality, too. And I think in this time, that's really needed.
But even within groups where you're supposedly all on the same side of something, there are differences. We see political parties squabbling among themselves right now. And so I wonder if this idea of breaking bread together isn't just a brilliant way to bond in some essential sense, so that when you have to get through your differences, different ideas, it's easier somehow. What do you think, Julia?
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, food is something we all have in common. Everyone around the world, you know, we all eat. It's therefore got the real power to bring us together. And it's okay to disagree. But, you know, when we eat together, we can create spaces where we feel safe and comfortable and familiar and safe to, you know, maybe be a little uncomfortable and to have difficult conversations. And really amazing things can happen over meals.
Here's this recipe from Julia's book, spicy tandoori cauliflower with minted yogurt. Indian spices can be intimidating for people, but when you look at this recipe, it's not intimidating. And so what am I talking about? Greek yogurt, and then olive oil and garlic and turmeric and cumin and cayenne pepper for a little snap, some salt and the fresh cauliflower that you cut into florets, a little squeezed lemon, or you could use lime juice, some mint leaves. And then what happens? We've got an oven going at around 425. You got a sheet pan in there and you want it to heat up with nothing in it.
Yeah, exactly. You heat up that sheet pan because a tandoor is an oven. It's a type of oven that gets incredibly hot. You know, most of us don't have them in our Western kitchens. And, you know, just to mimic that kind of heat, you know, you crank up the oven, you get that sheet pan already hot. So when the cauliflower lands on it, you know, it sizzles almost like a skillet. Meanwhile, you mix those spices and aromatics, the ginger and everything, into the yogurt, and you coat the cauliflower in the yogurt, and then you put that spiced and yogurt-coated cauliflower straight onto that hot sheet pan, and the yogurt becomes delicious. It sort of makes this coating. It's almost like fried cauliflower without the mess of oil and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It just holds all that flavor. It keeps it really nice and tender, but it also gets a little bit crisp. It's just delicious, and it couldn't be simpler. And then you take some of that same yogurt, you know, that you have out anyway, and just put that little squeeze of lemon or lime, you know, whatever kind of acid you have around. It could be vinegar, you know, it really doesn't matter. And then just some fresh mint, and that cool minty yogurt kind of hits that hot, spicy roasted cauliflower, and it's delicious.
I'm going to make a lot of noise in my apartment so that the people next door move out and you can move in. Because then I can come over for dinner and have these things all the time. That is
good.
A delicious recipe. I like how you think about this. So here's one. I went through the book and I folded down the corner of every page where I said, that is delicious. And so here we go again with Julia. It is a sheet pan sausage with potatoes and red cabbage. So in a way, this is just like the Alsatian dish, Chris, with sauerkraut and it's just like that, except it's on a sheet pan. So I love this. Cabbage that you slice up, a small head of cabbage, and then some potatoes, let's say Yukon Gold, you cut them in half, and a little olive oil and salt, and some sausage.
I'm so glad you picked this because it's such a great example. It's an easy and comforting recipe. Again, not expensive. Really satisfying. And roasted cabbage is delicious and very underrated. And yeah, you slice the cabbage and potatoes and you roast them for a little bit because they take a little while to cook and you start to get them soft and everything. And then you throw some sausages on top and roast them, and the extra fat and everything that comes out of the sausage mixes in with the cabbage and potatoes. You have one pan that everything goes on. It's very easy to clean up. I just put the sheet pan on the table, the whole thing, and then, you know, a jar of mustard, maybe some horseradish or sour cream, you know, whatever kind of condiments you like. And especially when it gets cold out, it's such a wonderful dinner. It takes so little effort to prepare.
I'm going to nominate Julia for the Nobel Peace Prize because what greater way to get people to somehow start to open up to each other, agree with each other, listen to each other, than to be satisfied with delicious food? I mean, this is really an ingenious idea. This is Julia Tertian. Her book is called Feed the Resistance. Really good food for small groups or a crowd. If you are gathering to politically resist something or propose other ideas about how things are going, of course, the resistance right now has to do with people, for the most part, resisting certain policies in the current administration. So, and that would include you. Julia. Okay. Julia, red lentil soup with coconut and cilantro. Now, that would be dinner for me. This is on our website, by the way. Olive oil, some onions, fresh garlic, fresh ginger, tomato paste, some curry powder, chili powder, coconut milk, red lentils, and cilantro. If you like cilantro, you could always substitute parsley if you're in that crowd that doesn't like cilantro. Okay. Hard to do, Julia?
No, it couldn't be easier. You just quickly cook chopped onion, some fresh ginger and garlic, get them nice and soft, and then you introduce some great flavors through curry powder and chili powder for a little heat and a bit of tomato paste. And then you add red lentils and coconut milk. You get this big pot of incredibly beautifully seasoned soup that is so fragrant. It's so good for you. It's so affordable. You know, you can serve it as is. You could serve it with a little rice in the bowl, bread alongside, maybe like a flatbread. You could put a dollop of yogurt on top, stretch it out in these ways if you want. But it's just, it's so, so good. And it's the kind of thing you can make a huge pot and, you know, just have it in the fridge and, you know, invite a bunch of people over or bring it somewhere. It's just one of the easiest
and
recipes.
I like it too. It's vegetarian. It's vegan.
It's vegan, gluten. Yeah.
It's everything that when anyone comes to you and says, oh, I'd like to come to your party, but I'm this, I'm that, I'm this,
yeah.
I'm that. And it has that tomato paste, which gives it such good base and the curry powder flavor. If you're not vegetarian, you're not even going to miss it.
And
it feeds
exactly.
everybody with one recipe.
Can I jump in there and say, how many of us say we're going to have people to dinner? And we don't because it requires, we think, a certain kind of elaborate approach. And you think about the groups of artists back in the day, and probably still, who didn't have much money and gathered together over a pot of spaghetti, a jug of inexpensive wine, and a baguette. And it cost almost nothing. But the idea was to get together, be together, have some nourishment, and there you go. Everybody was just happy. This is one of those dishes where it is really good, not expensive. You don't have to go to a ton of trouble to have a bunch of people over on a weeknight or a weekend. You can just say, we're doing stew.
And you can say it's fancy because people think lentils are fancy.
They do.
They do.
Yeah,
from
totally. I have a lentil soup for us this evening.
And you can say they're special lentils from,
See?
I don't know where,
Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's in the book a pizza frittata for a crowd. There are a lot of political meetings I would go to get my hands on this. This is angel food bread pudding with butterscotch sauce. Okay, so... whole wheat sandwich bread that's going to be cut up into bite-sized pieces. Cinnamon raisin sandwich bread, so you can see how this is going to be really good. Condensed milk, which makes everything great. Granulated sugar, whole milk, vanilla, ground cinnamon, heavy cream, eggs, and then this easy, easy butterscotch sauce. Julia, fire away in the last minute and a half we have.
How bad could that be? All that good stuff.
Oh.
It's called Angel Food Bread Pudding because I make it often at this organization called Angel Food East where my wife and I volunteer. And it's kind of, you mentioned God's Love We Deliver. It's very similar. And for our shift, I've sort of become the de facto baker of the group.
Huh.
And usually I'm tasked with using up things that are left over. So, you know, leftover fruit, and I turn it into a cobbler or a cake, that kind of thing. But there's always leftover bread. So I started making this bread pudding. The recipe is so easy. And it's such a great way to use up leftover bread. And it's such a great way to turn something that you think isn't so fun anymore into something so special. So I had to share it. And you know, it's making something, a homemade baked good that doesn't require making a pie crust or a batter or frosting anything.
How simple is that?
Make an easy custard.
Seriously, yeah. If someone came up to me in a van and said, I'd like to drive you to the polls to vote, and I have this warm bread pudding in the van. I mean, honestly, I would be just saying, oh, my God. This
I could see
is
Faith
such
in her neighborhood next election.
Politically.
She's got it in her trunk. She's like, anyone want free bread pudding? I will take you
pockets.
To the polls.
It honestly, it's just such a good idea for organizing people. I don't know why we don't do this more. We've got hot brownies. We've got popovers. If you want people to jump on the bandwagon and feel inspired, this is just a genius idea, Julia. Feed the resistance. Recipes and ideas for getting involved, because there are lots of tips in the book along with these recipes. And there are ways where you can think about your individual involvement making a real difference. Julia, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Keep cooking and keep working. Julia Tertian, Feed the Resistance. We're on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and again at 9 p.m. and then Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. You know our slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Hey, thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little more party in your life, we're here online at foodschmooze.org. And we hope you'll talk with us on Facebook. We're at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.